Chapter 7. Raw and empty, Tongfan finds the least used room in Wangsha's house and secludes himself in it for the rest of the evening. Not even Deng Ar would find herself wandering into the records room with Wangsha's abundant library available. Anyone who knows him will expect him to head to the tavern to drown his woes in a jar of wine. But the thought of even seeing other people right now makes Tongfan's skin crawl. The last time he felt this awful, he sought refuge in Wuyin's home, slept in Dwarla's bed, believing she would never return to sleep in it again. The irony does not escape him, even as he misses them both fiercely. When he's sure the rest of the household must be long asleep, Tongfan creeps out of the records room and back to the guest quarters. Their receiving room is empty and silent, just a few candles lit on the table, and a closed basket of food. It smells faintly of pork and ginger, and Tongfan's stomach turns. He doesn't bother taking the lid off. Deng Ar and Sui Zhou's doors are closed. The calmness of the scene feels unreal. Tongfan almost expected to find the room destroyed, furniture blown apart, reflecting his inner state in the aftermath of the argument. His own door is ajar, and he enters to find a single lantern lit, the stove in the corner glowing with a subdued warmth that speaks of being long nurtured. He kicks his boots off in the middle of the room and crawls into bed. His body doesn't even feel like his own, as though he's retreated deep inside himself, observing his extremities from far away. It's very quiet, and for the first time in as long as he can remember, he feels completely alone. He stirs briefly in the morning at the sound of people moving around in the room outside his door. He grasps after sleep, following it hastily back down into oblivion. The next time he wakes, the sun is shining high through the trellised window. Wangsha is sitting on a stool near Tongfan's door, reading. Tongfan stares at him, confusion his first emotion, followed swiftly by the sickening recollection of yesterday's events. As if he senses Tongfan's gaze, Wangsha looks up. Seeing Tongfan awake, he closes the book and stands. "Not the anonymous author's best work." Wangsha holds up the book, and Tongfan sees that it's one of his own. His latest, as a matter of fact. Deng Ar must have delivered on her promise to have it sent to him, or else brought it up in person. "The naivete of the ingenue, while endearing at first, becomes labored by the sixth volume. The reader has lost all sympathy by this point, and just wants her to develop some sense." Tongfan pulls the blankets tighter around his face and curls into himself. "Not now, Wangsha." "Absolutely now," Wangsha returns, and then he's wrenching the blankets off. Tongfan clings on furiously, fighting him for a moment. Wangsha wins. "You have slept through both the Dorbet party and Deng Ar leaving. It's time to take up your own responsibilities." Successfully having divested Tongfan of all his bedding, he stalks out of the room. Tongfan supposes it's better than being woken with a bucket of cold water. When Tongfan emerges from his room after washing his face and putting on a clean set of clothes, Wangsha is sitting at the table, loading up Tongfan's plate with breakfast food. "I'm not hungry," Tongfan says sullenly. The look Wangsha gives him could kill a man on the spot. Tong Fan sits down and picks up his chopsticks. His stomach growls in direct contradiction to his words, and he eats hurriedly, not looking up at Wangsha as he does. Qingge's intelligence has confirmed the time they plan to attack, Wangsha says, tone as relaxed as ever. This afternoon, you and I will pay a visit to the Lotus Blossom Tea House and enjoy a conspicuous meal together. Once we return, we will make our way through the secret passageway to the fort with Ding Rong. What do they serve at the Lotus Blossom Tea House? Tong Fan asks before he can stop himself. Lamb, Wangsha says shortly, glaring at him. And noodles in a clear broth, he adds after a moment. They have had some success catering for our officers and officials who have been posted here from the capital. He sniffs. We are guaranteed to be noticed there. It's where I poached my chef from. Tong Fan gives him a judgmental look, which Wangsha refuses to acknowledge. He doesn't speak again until Tong Fan is pushing away his empty plate. Sui Jo looked like a corpse this morning, he notes, and Tong Fan freezes. Not the best impression to make on his future in-laws, and Dong Ar would barely speak to me when I saw her off to the inn. I assumed you must have died during the night. Tong Fan scowls. He doesn't want to talk about this. Doesn't want Wangsha's keen mind picking it apart like just another case. Wangsha sighs at his extended silence, then stands. You have 3 hours. Then we'll take a carriage to the tea house. He looks Tong Fan up and down. Wear the white cloak. The guest quarters are too quiet, too empty once he's left. Tong Fan feels unbearably restless, so he heads into one of the more secluded courtyards and practices the basic combat forms Jin San had taught him. There's only so much he can do without an opponent to practice with, but focusing on coordinating his body in ways he's unused to is far better than letting his mind have free rein. After a while, he realizes there's someone watching him, leaning in one of the doorways. Tong Fan stops, standing up straight to look at him. Jia Kui.
Do you want to try another round?
Jia Kui asks, his smile small but genuine. Tong Fan almost cringes at the memory of last time, when Dong Ar had asked Jia Kui to test them. Still, he nods briskly, holding his fists up loosely in front of him. Yes, he says. Please. Jia Kui goes easy on him, using a fraction of his strength and skill. Still, the sparring leaves Tong Fan sweaty and breathless. He revels in it, all the energy in his body going to the force of his blows, all his focus to studying the weaknesses of Jia Kui's stance and the projections of his attacks. True to character, Jia Kui speaks rarely and adjusts Tong Fan's form with the briefest of touches when he needs to. After Tong Fan has been knocked to the ground once more, they pause for him to get his breath back. Jia Kui gestures to Tong Fan's belt.
Have you used that before?
Tong Fan looks down. Sui Jo's knife, tucked in next to where his chopsticks hang. Tong Fan thinks of his desperate gambit to stop the Oirat who tried to take off Sui Jo's head. It had worked, though through no great skill. He shakes his head, takes the knife, and hands it to Jia Kui. Jia Kui examines it carefully.
I have seen this one before,
he says,
on the wall in your house.
Tong Fan flinches before he can stop himself, looks down at the ground. Jia Kui hands the knife back.
You've improved,
he says simply, and Tong Fan looks up in surprise.
You're no kung fu master,
Jia Kui admits,
but I no longer think you would be killed instantly if I left you unprotected.
Thank you, Tong Fan replies uncertainly.
He's not sure Jia Kui has ever given a compliment in his life, so he can't make himself hold it against him. He takes up his defensive stance again. It takes a little longer for Jia Kui to knock him down this time. There's even a moment when Tang Fan thinks he might win, if only fleetingly. Jia Kui is breathing a little harder as he holds his hand out again. Tang Fan is pleased to note.
There is one more thing you need to learn,
Jia Kui says as he hauls Tang Fan up.
In a real fight, there are no second chances.
He releases his grip on Tang Fan's wrist.
You can't make mistakes. Every move has to be right every time.
His eyes bore into Tang Fan's. Tang Fan laughs nervously. There's no answering humor in Jia Kui's expression, just the same impassive intensity that makes him seem so imposing, whether he's standing threatening behind Wangsha's shoulder or effortlessly breaking the necks of Wangsha's assailants. He always warned me it would end, comes unbidden into Tang Fan's mind, in Lin Su's grief-stricken voice. But I still, she continued, then stopped. But she still what? Abruptly, Tang Fan is desperate to know. Jia Kui knocks Tang Fan to the ground, sweeping his legs out from under him. There are no second chances. Tang Fan doesn't grip Jia Kui's offered hand this time, breathing hard where he lies on the ground.
Tang Daren?
If you had a second chance, Jia Kui, would you take it? It only occurs to Tang Fan once a frown tightens Jia Kui's usually expressionless face how cruel the question is. I'm sorry, Tang Fan says hurriedly, rising awkwardly on his own. He bows swiftly. Forgive this one's rudeness.
Yes,
Jia Kui says, making Tang Fan pause in the midst of taking up his stance again.
Of course I would. In an instant, I would take it.
Tang Fan has never heard him use words so superfluously, but there is no hint of hope or eagerness in his tone. Just blunt honesty. Tang Fan's breath is taken away once more by the unfairness of it. I'm sorry, Tang Fan says again. Jia Kui shrugs, oblivious to the knowledge Tang Fan holds. He lifts his hands in a combat stance, gestures for Tang Fan to try again. Night comes quicker than Tang Fan thought it would. He plays drunker than he is, voice loud as he heckles Wangsha when they climb into the carriage outside the tea house, the meal weighing heavily in his belly. He feels more reckless than anxious about the night ahead. Wangsha frowns at him.
Just because Jia Kui taught you to throw a punch doesn't mean you're invincible, he says.
If I believed that, I would never take on half the cases you bring me, Tang Fan drawls in response. When they arrive at the residence, Tang Fan has to struggle to keep his face forward instead of looking around for observers.
They are watching,
Jia Kui mutters as he escorts them inside. They waste no time once the doors are closed behind them. Ding Rong is already waiting, though Tang Fan doesn't recognize him at first. He's dressed as a soldier. He steps aside to reveal two more uniforms laid out on the table behind him.
We need to blend in if we are to move freely in the fort,
Wangsha explains, shrugging off his outer robes. Ding Rong moves to help him slip the armor over his shoulders. He helps Tang Fan next. Wearing the uniform gives Tang Fan a strange, unsettled feeling. He supposes it's from being overseen at the dinner table by Sui Zhou's armor for the past few years, as though he is a child, playing with something he's been forbidden to touch. Wangsha narrows his eyes at him when they are both fully disguised.
Well, you don't look as terrible as I thought you might, he says. Tongfan doesn't even have time to be offended. They climb down into the cellar and follow Dingrong's upraised torch through the tunnel. They linger in the stairwell from the hidden chamber to the main fort, breath held, until they hear shouts from outside and pounding feet. The attack must have been made on Wangsha's house. For the first time that night, Tongfan's heartbeat picks up a notch. They wait until silence falls above them again. Then Dingrong nods, opens the trap door, and leads them out into the fort. The rebels' plan has worked well. They manage to make their way through the fort to Chen Yue's office without laying eyes on another soul, presumably along the same path the insurgents will shortly walk behind them. There's no way of knowing how long it will take them to arrive, though. It had been unclear from Qinga's intelligence just how they were planning on entering the fort to start with, and how long after the attack on the residents it would be. Tongfan is sure they won't waste any time, though. Chen Yue's rooms are brightly lit by candlelight already, as though waiting to receive visitors. Tongfan scans across the wall of scrolls, books, and papers, and Wangsha takes up position standing in front of it, taking out his pistol. Without discussion, Dingrong and Tongfan stand a step in front of him, flanking him on either side, all three of them facing the closed door. Sui Zhou's unsheathed knife is sweaty in Tongfan's grip. It can't be more than half an hour, waiting in silence, ears straining for the sound of movement outside. Sweat drips down Tongfan's back under the heavy layers of the uniform, the small room heated by the blazing candles. Dingrong shifts next to him. Behind them, Wangsha is silent. Footsteps outside the closed door, a shadow beneath it, the sound of the hammer on Wangsha's pistol clicking softly. The two men who enter aren't dressed as soldiers. Tongfan doesn't recognize them, but from Dingrong's indrawn breath, Tongfan assumes that he has. They halt as soon as they see that the room is occupied. Tongfan is relieved to see they are not carrying swords, though they both take on defensive stances immediately. It seems they had assumed they would encounter no resistance.
"Gentlemen," Wangsha says cheerfully, "we have been expecting you for some time."
They had all hoped that once confronted, the men who had come to copy the maps would surrender. The moment they see Wangsha, however, that hope evaporates. A blink after Tongfan sees recognition in their expressions, the men charge forward. One of them is holding a knife, and after so long waiting, there is a sudden speeding up of time, everything happening at once. Dingrong throws himself forward first, ducking under the first strike and kicking his foot into the back of his assailant's knee. The man stumbles but recovers immediately. But Tongfan doesn't have time to observe any longer because the second assailant is coming towards him. The most basic forms Jin San taught him were how to defend himself. He is grateful for the weeks of practice now. His movements feel instinctual, automatic. Jia Kui had gone harder on him than he thought. In comparison, his opponent now performs as though this is his first street fight. Wangsha hasn't even fired his pistol. Then again, he tends to wait for the penultimate moment to take his shot, and he had been eager to take these men alive for questioning. For that to happen, though, Tongfan is going to have to stop dodging and start attacking. Before he can, there is a clang of something metal hitting the stone floor, the harsh sound drawing Tongfan's eyes to it instantly. Time slows again, not the slowness of impatient waiting, but slow like congealed blood, oozing from a festering wound. The Bolong rebounds on impact, turning end over end as it bounces across the floor. The staccato sound fills the room until there is no air left in it to breathe. Dingrong dives to catch it, hands out, belly first on the floor. Tongfan barely manages to lurch forward in time to tackle the man, aiming a kick at Dingrong's chest. They both hit the floor hard.
Tong Fan gaping as the breath is knocked out of him, the other man's head hitting the stone floor with a sickening sound. "Disarm it!" Wangsha is shouting, in a tone Tong Fan has never heard him use before. Ding Rong is still on the ground, his hands flying desperately over the Bolong. Tong Fan staggers up, the man he'd tackled still motionless on the floor. Tong Fan is bracing for an attack from the second assailant. It takes him too long to realize he's gone straight for Wangsha. Too distracted by the Bolong, Wangsha doesn't have time to lift his pistol. Tong Fan's training had been all about defending himself, not others. It's only now that he realizes what an enormous lack of foresight that was. He does the only thing he can think of to get the man away from Wangsha, launching himself onto the man's back, using the full weight of his body to pull him away. The man staggers backwards, though not far enough. He wrenches himself around to shake Tong Fan off, and Tong Fan wraps his legs around the man's torso to hold on. "Tong Fan!" Wangsha shouts furiously. "Get out of the way!" He's holding his pistol up towards them, a desperate look in his eyes. The knife is still in Tong Fan's hand. He stabs it into the top of the man's shoulder, and finally the man jerks and rears back, crying out in pain. Then they are both falling backwards. The weight of both their bodies slams Tong Fan's back into the stone, and his head hits a moment later, making his vision spark brightly. It takes him a second to recover, but through his own rough panting and Wangsha's shouting, he can still hear the urgent ticking of the Bolong. Even as a familiar despair and fear washes over him, he tries to drag himself up. His head clears fractionally. The attacker is still on him, still constrained by Tong Fan's hold on him. The man struggles to free himself, and Tong Fan knows if he does, then it's over. He'll kill Wangsha, or Tong Fan, or both of them, if the Bolong doesn't kill them all first. The room is spinning. Tong Fan holds on firmly as the man tries to wrestle himself away. But when he lifts his body to slam Tong Fan back to the ground again, Tong Fan's grip loosens. With the moment of weakness, the man is twisting, swinging his arm to stab down wildly. Tong Fan scrambles back, but he's too slow. The knife in the man's hand sinks into Tong Fan's leg, low on the side of his thigh, where the armor opens to allow the flex of his knee. Tong Fan kicks wildly, not even feeling the pain at first, just fierce satisfaction as his boot connects with the man's face. Then a moment later, there's a great, violent crack of a sound filling the room. "The Bolong! The Bolong!" Shaking violently from the terror rushing through him, Tong Fan looks around frantically. Wangsha stands with the pistol in his hand, still pointing at the man, now lying face down and motionless between Tong Fan's knees. Ding Rong is still lying on the floor, though propped up on his elbow, the dismantled Bolong on the floor in front of him, his eyes wild. "It's a fake," he says in a shaky voice. "There's no explosive." Tong Fan goes limp on the ground, heart thundering like a herd of bolting horses in his chest. His breath is shallow and shaky. Pain throbs in his head and his leg, and he fumbles his hand down to feel where the assailant stabbed him, finding the site wet with blood. Wangsha looms over him, and Tong Fan struggles to read his expression. "That was very stupid of you," Wangsha says, "but I am grateful you took it upon yourself to learn how to not be completely useless." It's a far cry from the exoriating Tong Fan had received from him after Ashurtamore had stolen the Bolong. Something in Tong Fan's chest loosens, and he finds his hands are shaking. Wangsha sighs, tucks his pistol back in his belt, then holds out a hand to help Tong Fan up. Tong Fan takes it, leaving bloody fingerprints on Wangsha's sleeve as he rises to his feet unsteadily, hissing through his teeth as he puts his weight on his injured leg. Ding Rong is already standing, his expression impassive again, and he hurries to tuck his shoulder under Tong Fan's arm, supporting him to stay upright. They've barely taken stock of themselves when there's a rush of many footsteps in the hallway. Tong Fan grasps for his belt, but Suizhou's knife is still in the attacker's shoulder. Beside him, Wangxia takes out his pistol again, but it's nothing more than a bluff without having been reloaded. A moment later, Jia Kui appears in the doorway, a patrol of soldiers behind him. He's blood-spattered and tense, but seemingly uninjured, bloodied sword in hand.
Wang Daren,
he says, once he's taken in the scene.
The rebels at your residence have been subdued, and the fort is secure.
Good, Wangxia says, tucking the pistol into his belt once more. He nudges one of the bodies on the floor, the man Tong Fan had tackled away from Ding Rong. This one is still alive. Take him to the dungeon. Jia Kui nods, and the patrol parts on either side of the door as Wangxia strolls out, Ding Rong helping Tong Fan to hobble after him. Tong Fan insists on being treated by the doctor in the same room as Jia Kui gives his report, though separated from the others by a privacy screen. The doctor doesn't look twice at his bare, spindly legs, just focusing on cleaning and stitching the stab wound low on Tong Fan's thigh.
The Bolong was fake, Ding Rong is saying. They must have intended to plant it in the fort to use as further evidence for the Oirats of the Ming's supposed intentions.
Wangxia responds. And the attackers? Were they in disguise or were they actually Oirat colluders?
The attackers were Oirat,
Jia Kui says.
Once the alarm went up and the troops came down from the fort, I could tell that most of the soldiers beyond the first dozen to arrive had no awareness of the scheme. We were able to capture a few of the Oirats alive. I recognized some of them.
Tong Fan can't see them, but he can imagine the thoughtfulness on Wangxia's face.
And the men who came to Chen Jiangjun's office?
Wangxia asks.
They were the same ones who tried to get information from me,
Ding Rong says.
Perhaps the brains of the operation, then.
Don't forget the Ministry of War! Tong Fan calls out to them.
Aya, Tong Daren, how could I forget?
Wangxia calls back.
Your next case, once you all return to the capital with the new Sui Furen.
Tong Fan's breath catches. It isn't that he'd forgotten. The hurt of his argument with Sui Zhou stirs awake in his chest again. But it feels strangely tame after the existential dread of seeing a Bolong activated again, of using the meat of his body to battle certain death.
They're getting married here?
He finds himself asking, not liking how small his voice sounds. There's a brief pause, onto which Tong Fan's mind hooks its claws, finding vicious purchase.
I do not have a complete understanding of Oirat wedding customs,
Wangxia says.
But I am sure they wouldn't without higher-ranking representatives of Ming present. Then again,
another excruciating pause.
We did discuss multiple ceremonies with Bat Bayarbe to honor our different customs.
Tong Fan hurriedly pulls on his trousers over the bandage, the doctor barely pulling his hands away in time. He limps out from behind the screen to glare, and the doctor hurries after him.
Tong Daren, your head.
Tong Fan winces as the doctor pushes him down by the shoulder onto a stool, then pushes him forward to examine the back of his head. Even Jia Kui is watching him with amusement. Tong Fan scowls. Have you heard from Qinga?
She's safe, Wangxia says. We will debrief with her tomorrow, once things have settled.
It's not serious, the doctor says, finally stepping away from Tong Fan.
You can sleep. Just take care not to disturb it with another blow.
Tong Fan grimaces. I'll do my best, he says sullenly. Something occurs to him suddenly. Is Dong Ar safe? He asks Wangxia urgently.
Wangxia lowers his head in a nod.
The Falling Leaves Inn remains outside the suspicion of the insurgents, despite Chinga's best attempts, he says dryly.
Tongfun frowns at him. You should be happy to have Jin Sanya on your side, he tells Wangsha.
Wangsha raises an eyebrow.
Somehow, I don't think Ming politics is what Jin San is invested in.
He leans back from the table, glancing around at each of them.
Rest, he instructs. Tomorrow we will interrogate the prisoners.
Waving off help, Tang Fan limps back to the guest quarters on his own. The main courtyard and receiving rooms of Wangsha's house are in ruin, soldiers still carrying away bodies. But the attackers hadn't made it very far into the house. The servants have lit the lanterns and the stoves already, making the guest rooms feel like they're waiting for their occupants to come home again. Tang Fan stands at the door, taking in the empty space. For the first time in hours, it's quiet. His head throbs and his leg burns, but into the void of all that violence and activity comes a great, aching sadness. It expands out from his sternum, soft-edged and deadly, until it's filling his chest up to the brim, making it hard to breathe around it. He limps into Suizhou's room. Lantern light softens the lines of the neatly made bed. This is where Tang Fan's heart had been broken. This is where Suizhou had held Tang Fan's heart in his cupped hands and cared for it so tenderly. The armor long since removed, Tang Fan sits on the bed to pull his soldier's boots off, wincing as he has to bend his injured leg. He stares at them on the floor for a good long while. It's how he first recognized Suizhou for what he was, in his ridiculous ruse as a chef. And when had Suizhou first seen Tang Fan for what he was? He draws out the recollection of Suizhou's words again, his voice hoarse with pleasure.
I have wanted this. I have wanted you. Wanted this for so long.
Tang Fan holds the memory in his hands like a small bird, soft and fragile. Suizhou's face, when he was struck from behind, when Suizhou had said to him,
"If that is what you truly want."
Tang Fan rolls his tender body into the blankets on the bed. Neatly made or not, it smells like Suizhou. Tang Fan curls up into the empty space and pushes his face into the pillow. Evidence of the attack is mostly gone by the time Tang Fan limps out into the courtyard the next morning. He wraps his white cloak closely around himself and makes his way to the Falling Leaves Inn, picking up breakfast from the street vendors on the way. Jin San is sitting on the front steps, elbows braced on his spread knees, as he takes in the morning foot traffic. He lifts his head in acknowledgement as Tang Fan approaches, takes the paper bag Tang Fan offers.
You survive then?
He eyes Tang Fan's leg as Tang Fan makes his way slowly up the steps.
With no little credit to Jin Xiang,
Tang Fan replies, smiling. Jin San grins, uncomplicated.
Come on, he says,
and accompanies Tang Fan at a considerately slow pace into the inn and up the stairs. He leads Tang Fan to the room next to his own, opens the door with deliberate quietness. Inside, Dong Ar is asleep with the blankets tucked around her shoulders, facing the door. On top of the bed covers lies Chinga, still dressed in the clothes Tang Fan last saw her in, fast asleep against Dong Ar's back. Her arm is slung loosely over Dong Ar's waist.
It was a late night,
Jin San says, stepping into the room and closing the door behind them. Jin San pulls one of the stools out to sit down at a small table. Tang Fan lowers himself carefully, sitting to the side to keep his legs stretched out. At the rustle of paper bags, Chinga stirs,
And a moment later, Dong-ar's eyes are blinking open as well.
Tongdaga!
She wriggles out from under the blankets, hurries over in her socked feet.
Are you all right? Is Wangdaga safe?
Tang Fan returns her embrace for a brief moment, before gently pushing her away.
Everyone is fine. Eat.
The four of them sit around the table and make quick work of the scallion pancakes. Tang Fan updates them briefly on the outcomes of the night before, still wary of sharing too much information with Jin San. The less he knows, the safer he is.
Mmm,
Dong-ar says as she chews her last mouthful, the conversation reaching a natural lull.
Tongdaga, we left before you woke up yesterday morning.
She stands up and hurries to the privacy screen in the corner of the room where her dress hangs. She digs around in one of its sleeves while Tang Fan watches curiously. When she returns, she's holding something, and she walks directly over to Tang Fan and hands it over. It's a red silk pouch embroidered with gold thread, no bigger than his palm. A wisdom pouch.
Suedaga asked me to give this to you,
Dong-ar says, a little hesitant for the first time all morning. She looks away quickly.
Has Wangdaga had breakfast yet? Maybe we should bring him some.
She walks back to the privacy screen, stepping behind it and retrieving the dress. Tang Fan stares at the wisdom pouch, wondering how something so small can feel so heavy. He rubs his thumb over it, feeling the crinkle of paper within. Swallowing down the rising emotion in his throat, he shoves it into his belt hurriedly. When he looks up, Qinga is staring at him. Jin San clears his throat, standing up.
Tongdaga, I will see you soon, he says gruffly, then nods at Qinga.
Nods, of all things, and ducks out of the room.
I should report to Wang Shi,
Qinga says with some reluctance, watching as Tang Fan struggles to his feet.
Join me outside for a moment, Tang Daren.
She leads him not through the main dining room of the inn, but through a door near the large room at the back of the building, which leads to a narrow staircase out into the alleyway that backs onto the stables. The smell of damp hay and horse manure is pungent in the crisp morning air.
Tang Fan, Qinga says softly, Dong-ar told me what happened between you and Sui Daren.
There's no judgment in her tone. It's simply open, laid out for him to engage with or not as he sees fit. Tang Fan takes a breath. About the argument, or... He waves his hand in front of him. He finds he's not feeling self-conscious about it for a change. Perhaps because he's too weary and heart-sore, or perhaps because of all the frank conversations he and Qinga shared in Huanyi brothel years ago now.
About the argument, she says gently. She didn't tell me about anything else, though I had assumed.
Tang Fan bows his head, leaning back against the wall of the inn to take the weight off his injured leg. It doesn't matter now, he says woodenly.
Run Qing,
Qinga says, and Tang Fan looks up at her in surprise. She stares into his eyes, earnest.
Why are you pushing him away?
Tang Fan sucks a breath of chill air into his chest.
He's getting married, Qinga Jia.
Many men are married, Run Qing. It has little bearing on who they choose to love in life.
Tang Fan's heart pounds hard and he stares at her.
It is a dishonor to Dwarla,
he says through the tightness in his throat. Qinga laughs, brief and faintly, though not unkindly. She grasps Tang Fan's hands before he can pull away.
Marriage is an agreement, Tang Fan. A contract that affords social benefit to both parties, if it is a good match. Perhaps in rare cases, one marries the person they truly desire. But even those partnerships do not always exclude others.
Tang Fan stares at her, his heart kicking in his chest like a frightened rabbit.
Trust me, Tang Fan, she says. I have had insight into the lives of hundreds of men and women, as a prostitute and as a spy. People of all walks of life share rich relationships with friends and lovers, in addition or secondary to their marital partners.
But I don't want to share him, Tongfun blurts out before he can stop himself, torn from some dark secret place of himself he'd barely been aware of before the words were out of his mouth. He clenches his jaw so hard it hurts, and he stares at the ground doggedly as heat flames up his cheeks.
Run Ching,
Chinga says, her gentleness not easing Tongfan's embarrassment one bit.
Dwarla loves Sui Zhou, as she loves you, and Dong Ar, and Wuyan, but I doubt she would ever seek to share Sui Zhou's bed.
Tongfan looks up at her, frowning.
Even if she were interested in men,
Chinga continues, mouth quirking.
She is his sister. She is your sister.
Chinga shakes her head, smiling fondly.
Perhaps you should speak with her before making such rash assumptions about either of their intentions.
The wall feels unstable at Tongfan's back, like he's leaning into a thicket of bamboo. Chinga keeps talking, as relentless as an invading army.
Spring books are a pleasant fantasy to escape to, but unfortunately, reality involves a lot more talking. Did you not speak with Sui Zhou about his intentions? Dong Ar told me that he said you would all live together. Is that so disagreeable?
Dwarla, safe and home. Sui Zhou, his. All of them together. With Dong Ar and Wu Yan, eating mince noodles at their shared dining table. Tongfan shies away from the possibilities with ease of old practice, even as a tender green part of him unfurls, reaching for it, already refusing to let go. It's too late, Tongfan chokes out. I rejected him. Chinga smiles again, her expression a little exasperated this time.
What did Dong Ar give you?
The wisdom pouch. Tongfan wrenches his hands away from Chinga's to search for it, fumbling. He almost drops it when he finally draws it out. He pauses, paper crackling through the silk in his grip, staring at Chinga desperately. She takes a step back, nods for him to continue. Tongfan unties and loosens the drawstring. The paper within is thin, folded many times to fit in the pouch. Tongfan withdraws it and unfolds it. It's only one sheet, 13 lines of Sui Zhou's small, neat characters. He reads it twice, folds it back down with shaking hands. He feels very small. His heart feels very big. Everything is too much, and Sui Zhou is very far away. I have to go, he says. Starts walking, directionless. He stops. I don't know the way. Tears rise suddenly in the back of his throat. Chinga grasps his forearm.
Jinga will know the way, she says. He's been couriering for weeks. I'll fetch him.
She runs back up the stairs. Tongfan paces, barely feeling the twinge of pain in his leg. His mind is racing. He puts the letter back in the pouch, tucks it in his robes against his chest, feels it burn there. Dong Ar bursts out of the door to the inn. Tong Daga, are we going to find Sui Daga? Tongfan nods, speechless, and Dong Ar throws her arms around him. We're going to see Dwarla Jia.
You shouldn't ride with your injuries,
Wangsha says when Tongfan tells him. Then, after a moment,
fine, just try not to start a war this time.
The doctor had told Tongfan to avoid another blow to the head. As he, Dong Ar, and Jinzan ride off on the north road not 2 hours later, Tongfan wonders if this counts. It will be evening by the time they arrive, Jinzan says. He rides in easy silence while Dong Ar chatters away next to him.
and Tong Fan takes the position behind them, experiencing an odd feeling like he's outside of his own body. Their pace is painfully slow. Tong Fan wants to be there already, yet he can't picture what it would be like to have already arrived. His mind skitters between different thoughts, unable to settle on a single path to follow. He can barely focus on the road ahead, just the swaying rumps of Deng Ar and Jin San's horses in front of him. When they break, Deng Ar doles out cakes that Tong Fan instantly recognizes as Sui Zhou's. He holds one in his cupped hand, stares at it, feeling as though he's about to cry again. Deng Ar sighs heavily. "I will eat it if you do not, Tong Daga." Tong Fan cradles his other hand around it as well, clutching it to his chest and glaring at her. Jin San laughs. The daylight darkens as the prairie stretches out on either side of them. Much of the snow has started to melt, leaving the skin of the prairie's rolling surface patchy and mottled. In the distance, on either side, they see the orange flickering lights of various encampments. One is directly ahead of them, and as they get closer to it, the faint hint of sound reverberating across the landscape rises in volume. The pulsing thrum of drums become discernible first, then the higher pitches of other instruments and voices shouting in celebration. Deng Ar turns to face Tong Fan where she's riding alongside him. "Did we miss the wedding?" she asks, distraught. Tong Fan shakes his head, his own feelings reflected in her distress. "I don't know. I don't know." He doesn't know what else to say, his stomach home to 1,000 fluttering birds. They dismount when they're within a short walking distance, leading the horses in on foot. There are many already tethered outside the camp, and they leave their own mounts with them. There are so many people in the camp that Tong Fan worries about whether they will even be able to find Sui Zhou and Dwarla. He's prepared to fight his way through, though he hopes he doesn't have to. It's a fruitless and fleeting worry, though, as their arms are grasped by the first edge of the crowd they step into, and they're drawn into the revelry. Deng Ar, apparently, has picked up some of the Oirat language. "They're celebrating," she cries, back over her shoulder at Tong Fan, face alight. Tong Fan would roll his eyes, except for the sick feeling in his stomach and the jabs of pain in his leg as he's dragged through the crowd. "It's too late. It's too late. And Sui Zhou got married without him there. Got married thinking that Tong Fan..." The crowd funnels them into an enormous tent. The sound is amplified, bouncing off the taut canvas and back down at the crowded masses of people gathered around tables, all circle around what little open space remains. Host to musicians playing the loudest music Tong Fan has ever heard. Women in bright clothing dance in front of the musicians, wide skirts and elaborate braids sweeping around them dizzily as they move. As well as the sound, there is the smell of smoke and cooking meat, and so much heat and light and so many people. Tong Fan scans the reveling crowd desperately, and when his eyes pass across the head table, he finds Sui Zhou staring right back at him. Their eyes lock, and everything else falls away in an instant. Sui Zhou is dressed formally, robes cut perfectly to the angle of his broad shoulders, cinched neatly at his waist. His hair is braided finely in the Oirat style, crowned with a twisted gold hairpiece. There are dark circles under his eyes. He looks as though he hasn't slept in days. He's magnificent. Tong Fan loves him so much. "Dwarla Jia!" Deng Ar cries beside Tong Fan, snapping the moment like a bowstring pulled too taut. She grabs Tong Fan and starts to haul him between the tables. Tong Fan stumbles after her, wincing. It's so loud and they are so hemmed in on all sides that he can hardly think,
But Dwarla is ahead of them, dressed in red with gold glinting in her hair, parting the crowd in front of her as she runs towards them. Her face is luminous, eyes bright and smile brighter, and she sweeps Dungar up into a full body embrace when they finally reach each other. Tongfan watches, overwhelmed, wishing he had something he could lean against before he falls down. Someone grips his shoulder firmly, and he turns. Wu Yin, his round face flushed from food and wine and heat, smiling warmly down at Tongfan. Tongfan didn't know how relieved he would be to see him safe until he feels his knees wobble. Wu Yin doesn't speak, just tips his head to gesture away to one of the openings in the side of the tent. Tongfan throws a glance over his shoulder at Sui Zhou, who is standing at the table now, turned toward them with his eyes wide. Tongfan shakes his head in apology. Then Wu Yin is pulling him outside. It's so much quieter, though the music is still clear, and Tongfan breathes in the cold air gratefully. They are between tents, the smooth wall of another a few paces away, a sight inconvenient for celebratory activities. They are, to Tongfan's great relief, alone.
Tong Doran,
Wu Yin says in his warm rumble, giving his shoulder a slight shake.
I'm glad you're here. Sui Doran said we shouldn't expect you.
I'm late, Tongfan says weakly. Are you... is she... A moment later, Tongfan is nearly knocked to the ground. Wu Yin steadies him as Tongfan receives a full body embrace from Dwarla, small and whole and alive in his arms, her arms clutched around his chest like a steel band, her hairpiece poking into his chin as he bows his head to press his face into her hair. She smells like smoke and sandalwood. I'm sorry, he's gasping. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. She tilts her face up to him with answering tears in her eyes, and her familiar smile twists his heart. He had resolved to never see it again. He has missed her so much. You're late, she says. To your wedding? Tongfan chokes out on a sob. She pulls back far enough to punch his shoulder, hard enough to make him wince. To rescue me. Sorry, he says again, helplessly. He's a mess. Everything is a mess. Dwarla looks at Wu Yin, some silent communication passing between them. He nods, then ducks back into the tent. Dwarla wraps her hand into the fabric of Tongfan's sleeve and pulls him further away, sound dimming a little more as they walk. Finally, she stops, steps back a pace to face him front on. Her face is serious in the low lantern light. I am marrying Sui Zhou, she says, matter of fact. Tongfan feels the tension in his own brow, his downturned mouth. Because you have to, or because you want to? She shrugs. He asked. I said yes. I couldn't care less what my foolish cousin thinks about it. Her expression tightens. It means I never have to see a Shirtamor again. She spits out the name. And that I can come back home and be with you, all of you. She licks her lips, seeming nervous. It's a foreign expression on her. Tongfan doesn't like it. If you will allow it, she finishes, setting her jaw and looking up at him with determination and more than a little anxiousness. There's a new scar tracing a pink line from her temple to her ear, Tongfan realizes. He huffs out a breath of a laugh, feeling as though the world has just been turned on its head. It is not something I have any say in. Yes, it is, she says. This is your family. I will not disrupt it for my own purposes. Her mouth works, expression mulish. I will not come between you. Tongfan stares at her, breathless. This is not what he imagined their reunion would be like. But it is so perfectly her.
Why had he dreaded it, ever since Sui Zhou had offered himself up as Wangxia's political sacrifice? This is Dwarla, generous to a fault. Dwarla who loves them as much as they love her. I missed you, he says, voice wobbling. I thought I was too late, that you were already married. Her expression softens. This is not a wedding feast, she teases. It's merely the best that Zoros could throw together on such short notice of an engagement. Tang Fan laughs, breath hitching unsteadily. I want you to come home, he says in a rush. I want to be at your wedding. She takes his hands, the gesture reminiscent of Qinga's just that morning, a century ago. He returns her grip tightly. You can keep him, Tang Fan, she says earnestly. There's no point in marrying him if you don't. He's as good as a walking corpse without you around. Don't, Tang Fan says, choking on a sob that turns into a laugh halfway up his throat. Are we in agreement then, Runqing? She holds her right hand up to him, even as her left still clutches his below it. He lifts his own, grasps hers firmly. Dwarla, Jia, he says. Yes. She can't stay. As the focus of the celebration, her absence will be noticed. Tang Fan waits outside the tent for a little longer, taking in huge breaths of the cold night air, staring up at the immensity of the stars. When he steps back in, he sees Wu Yin first, sitting at one of the outer tables, waving him over. Deng Er and Jin San are already seated there, devouring meat from the platter piled high in front of them. Tang Fan sits down unsteadily, and Wu Yin pours him a cup of wine. He gives Tang Fan a moment to collect himself, then refills the cup again when Tang Fan has emptied it. Sui Zhou is still at the head table, still staring at Tang Fan as he tilts his head down for Dwarla to speak into his ear, her hand resting on his forearm. His eyes are blazing.
It was a short demur's people,
Wu Yin says, dragging Tang Fan's attention away. Tang Fan frowns at him, struggling to focus.
His men were already waiting on the other side of the Zhuan Wu Gate. The delegation was not the full party who had come from the Oirat. Half of them had split off long before they'd reached the capital, disguised themselves as Hans. She used the trap door, pulled Alasi down after her. It was the only way she was strong enough to get him to move.
Wu Yin downs his cup of wine, throwing it back into his throat in one gulp.
His body may have protected her from the worst of the blast.
He shrugs.
Or they dragged her away quick enough. She was hurt. She didn't wake up until they were halfway back to the border. Was too weak to even think of fighting back until he already had her caged.
He smirks into his cup, though it's weak.
She escaped more than once, though never got far. It's pure luck we found her.
Tang Fan's eyes seek her out, watches as she throws her head back and laughs at what someone near her has said, as she bangs the table with her cup in praise of the musicians.
There's also this,
Wu Yin says, and hands Tang Fan something else. It's Dwarla's knife. He raises his eyebrow at Tang Fan's stunned look.
If you lose it again, I will take it as a personal affront against Aha.
Tang Fan nods sincerely, tucking the knife back into his belt. I stabbed a man, he blurts abruptly.
Did he deserve it?
Tang Fan nods again, and Wu Yin grunts in approval.
Sui Daren is staying in the tent with the blue flag,
he says after a little more time has passed.
Try to find the right one this time.
As the music slows and becomes more melancholy, the revelry starting to quiet at long last, Tang Fan rises to leave the tent. Deng Er is already asleep and drooling, her cheek pressed against Wu Yin's massive arm. And it seems at least a third of the crowd isn't far behind her, the copious amounts of wine consumed becoming obvious in more than one sleepy gaze. Sui Zhou's eyes burn on Tong Fan's back as he exits the tent. He takes a deep breath when he gets outside, heading back the way they'd come. Relieved that most of the crowd has clotted into groups around braziers, their singing ringing out into the night. A tent with a blue flag. Tong Fan comes to a halt in front of it. There are Ming soldiers stationed outside, but they don't bat an eye at Tong Fan entering, obviously recognizing him. The tent is well appointed, and Tong Fan is relieved to see Sui Zhou's sword leaning up against one of the wooden chests. He considers sitting on the sleeping platform, piled high with furs and embroidered pillows, but shies away from it in the end, taking a seat instead on one of the stools near the stove at the central pillar. The coals glow red through the cast iron grill, and Tong Fan stares fixedly at them, trying to clear his mind of its insistent chatter. He hasn't been waiting very long before he hears the rustle of canvas as the door flap is lifted again. Tong Fan jerks to his feet, clutching his hands in front of him as he turns his face to the entryway. Sui Zhou has stopped a few paces in, staring.
"You came,"
he says, in his soft, low voice. Tong Fan takes a hesitant step forward. "I got your letter, Sui Zhou. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have..." He takes another step, then stops, faltering. He's being too hasty on his injured leg. Sui Zhou is at his side in an instant.
"Are you hurt?"
"No, I mean, yes, but it's fine. Sui Zhou, it's already been seen to, and I'm trying to apologize."
"Sit down,"
Sui Zhou says, leading him back to the stool and guiding him down carefully. "Sui Zhou!" Tong Fan snaps waspishly, extending his leg in front of him again with a wince. "You're making this very difficult." Sui Zhou stops, bows his head.
"I'm sorry."
Tong Fan hates seeing him so cowed. "Guang Chuan," he says, heart aching in his chest. "Do not apologize to me. I can't bear it." He swallows down the lump in his throat. "Can we start again?" he asks softly, and Sui Zhou lifts his eyes to meet Tong Fan's gaze. Tong Fan takes a shaky breath. "I got your letter," he repeats. Sui Zhou lowers himself to the ground, kneeling in his formal robes next to Tong Fan.
"Run Qing," he says roughly. "We can marry formally, if that's what it takes. We will find a way somehow, even if it's only your family who knows."
Tong Fan cuts him off with a huff of incredulity. He lifts a hand at the confused hurt on Sui Zhou's face, but he's not sure if he's allowed to touch yet. Though his entire body aches to having Sui Zhou this close. After a moment, he rests his hand on Sui Zhou's shoulder, thumb brushing over the fine brocade. "Guang Chuan, I never wanted a ceremony. I still don't. I just want..." He grits his teeth, pushes on. "I just want you." Sui Zhou reaches up to grasp Tong Fan's hand on his shoulder, pulls it to his chest, holds it there with both of his own.
"Run Qing,"
he says hoarsely.
"You have me."
As if it is that simple, as if there is no struggle for Sui Zhou at all, as if it is Tong Fan who has been making it so difficult all along. He lifts his free hand to Sui Zhou's face, feeling something blossom open in his chest when Sui Zhou turns his cheek into his palm. "You should marry Dwarla," Tong Fan says, the words easy in his mouth, like speaking them is a relief. "Bring her home, so we can all be together again." Sui Zhou stares up at him. Tong Fan can barely stand the immensity of feeling in his eyes, but he makes himself bear it, not looking away.
"You're sure?"
Sui Zhou whispers. Tong Fan nods, then follows the urging of his heart, ducks forward, makes himself stop. "Can I?" Sui Zhou surges upwards, and their lips crash together with bruising force. Tong Fan clutches at the collars of Sui Zhou's robes, pulling him closer, tilting his head to seek the right angle to get into Sui Zhou's mouth. Sui Zhou's hands grasp at the back of Tong Fan's head, and Tong Fan flinches involuntarily. Sui Zhou pulls away again, brows furrowed in concern.
Your head.
I hit it, Tong Fan says evasively. Then, at the look on Sui Zhou's face, he sighs. Just a little bit, while I was saving Wangsha's life. Sui Zhou's eyebrows shoot up, and Tong Fan laughs softly. I will tell you all about it later, he says, then rises awkwardly to his feet. Sui Zhou stands swiftly next to him, hands hovering. Tong Fan takes them in his own. Guangchuan, will you come to bed with me? Sui Zhou smiles, the first Tong Fan has seen on his face in days, recognizing his own words. Tong Fan gives in and lets him wrap a supportive arm around him as they walk towards the sleeping platform, limping a little as he goes. Wangsha is right. He shouldn't have ridden so far today. He has never felt less regret in his life. Sui Zhou lets Tong Fan undress him, removing the fine robes with care, draping them over the stand waiting nearby for just this purpose. Sui Zhou lowers his head as Tong Fan carefully unpins the golden hairpiece, his hands resting lightly on Tong Fan's waist. Much better, Tong Fan says once he's down to his dark blue underclothes, and his braided hair is softer around his face. Tong Fan leans in to kiss him again, doesn't stop even as Sui Zhou undresses him in return, unclipping his cloak to drop to the ground, pushing the jacket off his shoulders. Tong Fan heels his boots off without even looking, then backs himself onto the sleeping platform. He'd forgotten about the huge pile of furs. He feels himself relax as he sinks into them, as Sui Zhou unties his trousers and pulls them off. He skims his hand back up Tong Fan's leg, resting his hand warmly over Tong Fan's bandaged thigh through the thin under trousers. Tong Fan reaches for him, pulls him up. Sui Zhou comes willingly, easing down to blanket Tong Fan's body with his own. Tong Fan breathes in the scent of him, rubs his lips against the scratch of his beard, the weight of him holding Tong Fan down, his everything. For the first time, the feeling of not wanting it to end, ever, doesn't make Tong Fan feel like he's leaning over the edge of a cliff. He tucks his hand under Sui Zhou's hair, cupping his nape. When was the last time you slept? He whispers against Sui Zhou's lips. Sui Zhou drops his head.
The last time you were sleeping next to me,
he admits, words hot and honest against the side of Tong Fan's neck. Tong Fan scratches lightly at the base of Sui Zhou's skull, Sui Zhou's hair clinging to his fingers. With his other hand, he reaches for the furs, pulling one up and over them, settling his arm across the back of Sui Zhou's shoulders. Sleep, he says into Sui Zhou's hair, feeling a profound tenderness, a need to take care of him. He wonders if this is what Sui Zhou feels all the time, and presses a fierce kiss into his hair as well. Sui Zhou's arms tighten around him, and Tong Fan closes his eyes to better focus on the feel of him, the sound and smell, until he finally falls asleep.